You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Better believe it, get on your knees and pray hard, then pray hard, and never look back. Once the world forgave you, then do right, then do good. And it's so hard to do right when you do wrong, when you turn right, but you turn all the way, lele.
Hensha, and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Wonderful blessing to be here with you today. I love this show, and we love all of you who listen, who share, who are a part of what we do here. One of the reasons I love this show is the folks I get to meet and have wonderful conversations with right here on A Conversation with Dawn Karima. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and we have a radiant lady as our guest today. Would you please introduce yourself to us?
Hi, my name is Calista Cole. I am Inuit Yupik, an adopted Crow. I am currently a community peer support person with Perinatal Support Washington in their new Perinatal Education Resilience Collaborative Program. I am trained as a full-spectrum Indigenous doula. I'm taking an Indigenous Childbirth Educator Training course with the Center for Indigenous Midwifery, and I am a mother of six. With all of the interesting things that I feel like I'm doing in my life, I wouldn't have been able to do it without my firstborn, and he has given me such inspiration and love and support, not only as a mother, but as a woman in my life. And I wasn't sure where I was going to go with this this morning, but I'm just going to let the moment take me and say that one of the most dynamic and inspirational things about my life for me is that I'm surviving my firstborn's homicide. Oh. He was murdered in December 2018 at the age of 19. And that piece of his life and his story and my life and my story opened up this strong awareness for healing our ancestors. Knowledge for intergenerational trauma and the trauma that we carry on through our lives and give to the next generation unknowingly. And so I think that that's one of the pieces of my story.
Well, I feel so honored that you have joined us today. And I thank you for your courage, and I thank you for your bravery. And I'm so very sorry. You have all my condolences. And your patience and your grace, they are like a lighthouse shining for other people to make their way through their own darkness. And I thank you for that.
I thank you for those words. It has been a long journey,
mm-hmm.
and it has given me more strength than I could ever imagine in my life. I have accomplished so many things in the past 2.5 years that I never would have imagined
mm-hmm.
I could accomplish. like right now, this morning, I'm on your show, and that is so sacred and amazing to me.
Mm.
I have become I recently became a certified peer counselor.
Wow.
I graduated from the Native Action Network Legacy of Leadership cohort recently.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
My team had a wonderful project that we incorporated in our community that provided caretakers in our community art kits and self-care. And the feedback on that was amazing. And that started from something I started to process the trauma and the pain from my son's journey to the sky world and how much that affected me. So we incorporated this art project and wanted to give back to our community self-care kits. And that was really amazing. But I think one of the most important things that I got from my journey is I just surrounded myself with my Indigenous community. Like,
yeah.
I wanted to be surrounded so much. But, you know, by my community. And I am honored and grateful that I have been able to accomplish that.
Wow. I am honored and grateful to know you. And I am so happy that I have had the chance to learn from you. You know, I'm fascinated, of course, as a first-time mama. I'm so fascinated, and I want to talk about the Indigenous birth work that you're doing, because that's something I'm passionate about right now. But I see all of it working together. And I want to ask you a question, because we have so many people, because of this pandemic, because of violence, because of all the historical grief and trauma, what we're finding in Canada, just all kinds of broken hearts that needed to be mended. You know, right now they're listening to us and they're hurting. How did you decide or choose to become better instead of bitter?
Oh gosh, that was, I'd have to say that all of that came before this tragic event, like years before. As a mother, like I've got six children, and each of them are different personalities, different lives. But my firstborn, I was 17 when I had him.
Uh-huh.
And I was young, and I came from a background of so much trauma, foster care system, parents who were addicts, and family who I felt at the time didn't want me. And so, because I was the only one of my four siblings that stayed in the foster care system,
uh-huh.
I ended up a homeless teen. But to reflect back on your question, as my son got older, I saw the impact of trauma in his life, and
mm-hmm.
he was struggling with mental health issues, and that was a result of being my son, and I claim that because I had so much trauma that I didn't know how to do everything the way that he deserved it to be. All I knew was I loved this child. I
yeah.
loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I saw him struggle, the more I realized I needed to work on what was causing some of my responses and my reactions to things. And I realized that the majority of my parenting with him was, I was parenting out of fear. You know, he would do things, and then, you know, and my response was not in a, I need to teach you or lead you. It was an instant fear. And that helped me to realize I need to start talking about things that happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a family who didn't talk about things that mm-hmm. happened to them. You know, my father and my grandfather, I know they went through trauma.
Mm-hmm.
As I've tried to connect more to my family stories, I've learned that there was group home and foster care with my grandfather, and then my great grandmother. She was born in Nome, Alaska, and she was the product of foster care. From what I know, I don't know like the deeper roots of that story, but I know that in there's a cycle that I had to break. My aunt used to tell me, you were born to be a cycle breaker. You were born to break these cycles. That's why you were a girl. That's why your father didn't have a boy. And I was my father's only child, only surviving child. And so there was this, I feel like there was this spiritual thing that I was given this responsibility to heal things. And so I started engaging in trauma therapy, and I said, I need to talk about these things that happened. I need a safe space where I can say that these things happened to me, and I'm carrying so much guilt because society and the world and social workers and foster parents put that responsibility on me, that it was my fault I was angry. It was my fault I had... I also grew up with psoriasis. It was like one of the worst cases that my doctors had seen. And that I held on to this responsibility of, I need to be responsible. Like, I need to be better. But nobody taught me those things. And in that, I realized I was doing some of those same things with my child. And we hold this, you know, from our trauma, we hold this expectation. Like, as we grow up, we're expected to know things. We're expected to know how to just do things. And children don't work that way. We need to lead them. We need to teach them, you know. And so that's where it started. It started years ago when my son was 13. And to this day, there's this part of me that feels so bad that it took me so long. But with my connection to, you know, knowledge and the spirit world and just feeling his presence, often I feel him and I hear him say, but you didn't know what you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not your fault.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I am... just sitting here like a pretty little sponge, just, you know, soaking this up because we need these honest conversations, I believe, as mamas. And that's one of the beauties of tribal culture and community is that we had, you know, elders aren't always older. They're just somebody that's in a different space sometimes than you. And so we used to have this kind of community support. You know, mothers and aunties and grandmas and sisters and, you know, everybody all together learning, growing, helping one another. And so it's so wonderful to have the benefit of your wisdom, but I'm so sorry about what it took for you to learn it. And I am truly sorry. And I listen and I think of the folks right now who are in their parenting journey or beginning their birth journeys or starting to parent or starting to realize that there are better ways to parent. You know, just because mom and them did it doesn't mean it's right.
Right.
And so what would you say? Let's talk about that a little bit because I feel like you're helping folks. Our friends are really learning from you. I know I am. That place of fear, you know, that's so easy to fall into, you know. And so what advice or wisdom would you give someone who's listening and saying, uh-oh, I think maybe I'm doing it wrong?
Well, first, I would like to say if you feel like you're doing it wrong, I just want you to know that it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
That recognizing that you feel like you're doing it wrong is one of the first steps And it's one of the first things that says you're a good mom, you're a good dad, you're a good, you know, grandparent. If you can recognize, I feel like I'm doing this wrong and I feel like I need to do something different. It's humility within ourselves of acknowledging, you know, our youth and our next generation, you know, and saying, okay, you deserve better than this. You deserve better than what I got. And I need to make sure that you get that. And I would say just take one day at a time. It is not. So many people say, I see your resilience and I see your strength and you're such a great mom and you're doing so many good things. But it took a lot for me to get where I'm at because I didn't have those spaces to say, I screwed up today. I didn't have anybody to call to say, you know, I did something and I don't know how to fix it, because in my life specifically, and I know many in my community, we're afraid to say those things because there is Child Protective Services, and we know that the minute we say I screwed up, somebody's gonna make a phone call. And I know in my life, I've had people in my life who are no longer in my life right now that would have called or that have called CPS, or Child Protective Services, just out of spite, just because they didn't like something I did or something that I said, or they thought that that was the right thing to do. You know, my own mother has called on me. My oldest son's father has called on me, and it was such a hard hitting moment. Like, I'm doing the best that I can with what I know, and you're telling me I need to do something different, but I don't know how to do it different. You know, it's like making a cake. If you are making cookies, we'll use cookies because those are, you can buy the already made dough in the store. And if you are used to buying that, yeah, your mama bought it, your grandmama bought it, those are the best cookies that you knew. And then somebody says, well, I didn't know you weren't making homemade cookies. Oh, homemade cookies? How do you make homemade cookies? Well, you just put all the ingredients together. You know, that's what it's like. Like, okay, but how? I don't know how to do this. And there's nobody going to show me, but everybody's saying, stop buying the store-bought cookies and start making them homemade. We need to be able to have communities around us and say, today was a bad day for you, and I feel that, and I see you in this, but I want you to know you're still a good parent. You're still doing the very best that you can with what you have been given, and it's not your fault. And what we're going to do is we're just going to sit here in this moment, we're going to reflect on that, and we're going to do better tomorrow. I used to tell my son something all the time. Like, he'd call, you know, he went to a mental health and drug and alcohol treatment facility, you know, co-occurring. You know, I thought that was the best for him and at the time. And so he would call, and I'd say, you know, Everton, that was his name. I want you to look yourself in the mirror every morning and ask yourself if you were the person that you wanted to be yesterday. And if not, then you tell yourself that you're going to be the person you want to be today. And at night, you look in the mirror and you ask yourself if you ask yourself, am I the person, or was I the person that I wanted to be today? And if your answer is yes, then you go to sleep happy, and you wake up and you do it again. But if your answer is no, then you acknowledge that, you forgive yourself, and you tell yourself you're going to do better tomorrow. I often feel like we live in a society where we make one poor choice, and that is the definition of who we are, but our lives are defined by many, many different moments. I'm not the same mom I was 20 years ago, and I feel bad sometimes for that, but I also acknowledge that I'm not that person. I've changed, and I've done what I needed to do for myself, because this is who I want to be.
Uh-huh.
And we get to choose that.
So powerful. So very powerful. You know, my granddaddy used to say that people would ask him to pray over top of a problem. And he said that was like putting on a brand new coat over a raggedy dress. That, you know, if we don't acknowledge what's happening with us, what's really inside, what needs to be healed, then we don't get that healing. And so it's a wonderful thing you've done by acknowledging and being real and transparent and authentic. Because then your light shines. There are other mothers, there are other aunties, there are other grandmas, there are other people that can look at that and say, okay. Because I think nobody ever tells you their whole testimony. It's like the before and after pictures, right? We only see after pictures. We only see the after pictures, right? And so everyone walks around like on Instagram, oh, we have a perfect family. You know, we just get along. We just shine. We're wonderful. Everything is perfect. Thank you so much for asking. And then deep down inside, other people look and say, but wait a minute. I'm struggling here. I don't know what to do. And I think when someone like yourself takes the very brave step of saying, okay, here is the before picture, the journey picture, the after picture, you know, the after picture, we get the whole process. And that's beautiful.
Most definitely. I've had nights where I've had to stay up in all night drinking coffee in Denny's to have my baby have somewhere warm to sleep. You know, it was that bad sometimes. And I know that there was a lot of, you know, I'll even say this. His father got custody of him when he was 4 because I was homeless. And I regained custody when he was 6 after his father had abused him. And that was a long journey. And when my baby left me when he was 4, and he came back when he was 6, he was a different child. There was so much trauma in that young man, and not just from living with his father, but from being removed from his mother. That hurt him so much, and it took so long for me to realize that there was no healing there. Nobody got him the help that he needed. And that's, you know, that's another aspect of it, is our youth don't get the mental health care that they need when they've experienced these traumas like this. Like I didn't. You know, it took me until I was 30 to finally be diagnosed with complex PTSD. You know, before that, many doctors just told me I was depressed, and they gave me medications, and they never worked. I would stop taking them because I didn't like the side effects, and I said, you know what, this isn't working for me. I don't feel depressed. There's something else going on. There was no, let's see, you've been through this and this and this and this, you know, and I guess I should name that instead of saying this. You've been removed from your mother. You've seen your stepdad in a casket. You've lived with psoriasis covering most of your body. You've been homeless. You've been a victim of domestic violence. And, you know, you've been a teen mom. You've been judged. You've been let down. Nobody raised you. You raised yourself, and you're doing the very best that you can. Nobody said those things to me in 30 years, when I had to learn. And then it was when I decided to say, okay, I need to start talking about things that happened to me. I found a really good counselor, and she was really good, and she helped me through so much. And that was the knowledge that I got from about, you know, my trauma and recognizing it. Recognizing my parents' trauma was their trauma, and you know, they did the best they could with what they had. All of those things helped me to be able to see that when my son was murdered, and I don't know if I could look at it any other way if it happened in a different situation, but the young man who shot my son, and I apologize for the trigger warning, but this real conversation, he shot him 3 times. He didn't have to do that.
Right.
He could have survived that, but the young man was 16 years old, and he is also an Indigenous young man, and that hit my heart so much because I started worrying about him and his journey and his life because he's still here, and I hurt for his mother because I know that the trauma that we hold and live with, and the intergenerational trauma that we've been given, and how that's all connected. And some people have said, well, how did you find forgiveness? I said, that's the thing. Children do what children know.
That's right.
And I can't forgive a child because I was never mad at a child for doing what a child knows how to do.
Wow.
But I've had love in my heart for that young man because I know that his journey on this earth is still here. My son has gone to the sky world, and his presence has been with me. And yes, it hurts and it's painful, and there are days where it hits deep, and then there are days where I've gone so long with ignoring it that I have to think about it because it's taking so much for me to ignore it, but I can't change what's been done. I can't change that. And I don't want my children growing up with a mother who has so much pain in her heart that she's not focused on the good things in this world and the good medicine that we still hold because we are sacred people.
I thank you for sharing that with us, because even as we're talking now, you know, I think folks don't understand that there's ongoing trauma. You know, there's a pandemic, these residential schools have a body count, you know, and I think a lot of folks are in pain and they don't know what else to do with it. They don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to deal with it. And I love the fact that you're willing to normalize getting help with it as well. You know, if you had a broken leg, we wouldn't expect you to walk around for 20 or 30 years on that leg. We would help you. We would get you some crutches or a cast or whatever you needed from the medical establishment to get your leg healed. And yet we have folks walking around with wounds for even longer, and they're not being healed. And so I think you're contributing something really important to the conversation, which is saying it's all right. It's all right to prioritize your healing. It's all right to get help with healing. It's all right to do what you need to do to heal. And I think that's a very dynamic decision on your part. And so knowing that there's folks right now, there's people right now who are just, you know, struggling, hurting, for just all kinds of reasons. There's all kinds of things happening on a normal day. And then there's spectacular trauma happening in addition to that. Can you take a minute and just speak directly from your heart to someone who's hurting and who's hearing us right now?
Yeah. I know that there's a lot of pain right now, and I want you to feel that. I want you to allow yourself to feel that pain, because it's your pain, it's your hurt, it's what you're feeling. And so what if somebody else has it worse? We're not worried about them right now. We're worried about you. What you feel right now, that's relevant. And that matters. And if you can find somebody to talk more about that, somebody that you is somebody that you trust. I know we get these, you know, we get the 1-800 numbers and things, but sometimes it's really hard to reach out to strangers. I know for me, it's really hard for me to reach out to people because my pain is very sacred to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain things I don't want to hear. And so if you know somebody that is going to be able to sit with you in this and you're going to be able to say, you know, this is what's hurting me today and I just need you to sit with me for a minute in that. Don't try to fix me. Don't try to heal me, because this is what I need for my healing. Is I just need to acknowledge this. This is what happened. This is what I'm feeling. I'm hurting. And right now, this sucks for me.
Uh-huh.
It sucks. And then you get to decide how you want to proceed in addressing that. And if you want to heal in that right now, you get to make that decision. But just know that I know that if you don't want to talk about it or if you do want to talk about it, I know it's there. And I know that hurt is real. And I want to acknowledge that. And I want to let you know that I see you. And I see you every day in people that I walk by. I know we have smiles on our face, and some of us have our hair done and our beautiful beaded earrings and our regalia on and, you know, looking cute and looking deadly. But we are also carrying pain, too. I know I am every day. Every day as a mom, every day it hurts to not have my baby with me. And so I want you to sit with those loved ones that you have lost. And maybe ask them what they would like for your life. Maybe they can give you ideas on how to move through this, because I know it hurts. I know it hurts. And, you know, we find our way in the best way we know how to. But if you found yourself in this cycle, it's okay. It's okay to break that too. It's okay to say, oh, this doesn't feel like I want to keep doing this, and it's okay.
Thank you for that. We're going to go to commercial right now, and I'm just going to let those beautiful, wonderful words sink into your spirit, and we'll be right back.
For those fortunate enough to help the person who has always been their hero, find the care guides you need to help at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Talk to your doctor about creating a plan that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Wonderful things happen when we talk to one another. I believe that every good thing starts with a conversation. And this conversation is tremendous. And I'm thankful that we're having it. I'll ask my guest, would you please reintroduce yourself to us?
My name is Calista Cole. I am Inuit, Yupik, and adopted Crow.
I'm so thankful to have you here today. And I'm thankful for just all of the dimensions of your life. And there's one area that you really touch my heart by working in the things of birth. And it seems like you have an amazing balance, you know, that even as you work through death and loss and grief, you're also
helping to bring light and life into the world. Will you share some of that journey with us?
Yes. I will say a lot of that comes from just from being a mom. You know, mm-hmm. I have got four beautiful children that I'm still raising, and my oldest son, he was such a character, and his spirit was so full of life and love, and I knew that, you know, for him, he didn't see anybody as a threat. He always saw the good in people. And my daughter, she's 16 now, and she had experienced a lot of pain in losing her brother. But together, you know, as a family, we had moments where we laugh and we cry, and some of us talk and some of us don't about things. But there's a good balance in my home where we have serious moments, and then we have like these humorous moments, and it comes naturally. My children are very sarcastic. Some of them have a little dark sense of humor, but it's a good balance. And I'd say that like one of the things that helped me through the past 2.5 years and just in my life is just the continuous fight for doing the right thing. My son, when he took his journey to the Sky World, when he left, he thought he had a little over 5 credits to graduate high school. He was, you know, struggling with mental health issues, so he was in his, I believe, 6th year of high school, you know, but he was really determined to get his diploma. And then when I went to his school, because I heard about these things like posthumous diplomas and honorary diplomas, and I went to his school to get one, and they're like, oh, no, we don't do that. Like, the state of Washington has rules. And I'm like, what?
Oh.
You know, but I'm seeing articles about this thing, and I'm like, hold on. And then I received his high school transcript, and he had been missing high school credits from the 9th grade. And so he really actually only had 2.38 high school credits to graduate. In the state of Washington, you have got to complete your full high school credit amount before you pass away in order for your family to get your diploma.
Oh.
And I said, even though the state misreported his high school credit, the lawyer said if he was still alive, there's something you could do about it.
Mm.
But you can't. And the school district said, well, when the law changes, then we'll give it to you. I believe it was in the year 2020, the bill actually got introduced and was in Senate and was, you know, being read. And I've worked very closely with Senator Claire Wilson. She's been a great support for me in this continuous fight. But due to COVID, the law did not get through. They just ran out of time. And so I am in a continuous fight to change a law in the state of Washington around posthumous diplomas, where families, you know, if their child passes away, whether it be homicide, suicide, illness, accident, you know, like car accidents, those things, then the families will still be able to receive their high school diploma, even though their student didn't reach full high school credit. So I think that's just really ridiculous. We dedicate our lives to our children going to school. Like the first 18 years of their life, we're mm-hmm. getting them up and they're going to school.
That's right.
And they're becoming members in community. And we, as parents, we serve our community. We are working in the grocery stores. We're working in the healthcare facilities. We're working at the bank. We're working at the organizations. We're dedicating our lives to serving our communities. And when our child passes away, we can't get their diploma? after they dedicated their whole life to going to school. So that is one thing that has given me some light. My mm-hmm. children and this continuous fight to change this law for other families. I heard about, you know, another family that had went to the school, and I'm like, this is wrong. You know, the law is for now in the state of Washington that posthumous diplomas can be given to you know, vets that have dropped out of school to go serve in. And forgive me because I am not well versed on the exact terms of the law, but I know it refers to our veterans, which is amazing, and it's beautiful, because if they dropped out of school to serve, then rightfully so, they should get that. But our youth and our families should also have that opportunity as well, especially since a lot of our youth of color, our Black and Indigenous youth, are moving on to the sky world before they graduate, and that's a reality for us. And we deserve to be able to have some small recognition of their dedication to their school life.
Wow, I had no idea. I did not know any of this. And so thank you so much for bringing awareness, you know. I wonder, as I think about all that you're saying and all of your journey and all of the power in it, is there anything that you wish you had known, like, you know, just that you didn't know, that you think would help other people to know right now?
Out of all the things, I wish I had known that it wasn't my fault,
mm-hmm.
that I did deserve better, mm-hmm. and that those adults in my life growing up had a responsibility to lead me, to protect me, and to ensure that I had a better future, just as I did for my son. And I wish I had known all of that, because those things, that if I had been given the opportunity to have what other children have, like, I would have been able to give my son a better future, a better life. I would have been able to do better if I had been given better. And I, you know, it's a cycle, to be honest. It's like this the medicine wheel cycle that our adults and our children and our youth and our infants, like, we go through this, and we've got to be able to break that. You know, my children are, my four surviving children are being given a little bit more than what I was given, you know, and my son was given, but that piece that it's not my fault and I deserve better. And so I owe it to myself to make sure that I'm doing better, and I owe it to my children to do everything that I can to give them better. And I'll say it's not that great. You know, I'm in a really small house. It's a 3-bedroom house with my 4 children, and I've got a car, the back doors, the locks are stuck. You know, things are not that great, but their home environment is happy, and it sees them, and it acknowledges them, and it knows that they deserve a good environment. They deserve to be protected from unhealthy adults who have not healed their trauma, you know, and it's not that adults in their life with trauma don't deserve better, but they do, you know. But I also need to protect my children. And so, yeah, I think it wasn't my fault. I deserved better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not my children's fault, and they deserve better. And I think that is the most important thing. I think our youth deserve better, all of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, with this wisdom that you have gathered and are sharing with us, you're parenting children right now, and there are parents I know that, I mean, wow, having to parent through a pandemic, you know, and homeschooling, and then, okay, the news, the headlines, the political climate, the racism, all of the things that Indigenous people go through, and Black people and all people are going through something right now.
Mm-hmm.
Help us with that. You know, parents are that this is really a tough time to parent. But I guess technically and historically, it's always been kind of a tough time to parent for people of
right.
color. You know, it's like, you know. So can you help us with that, the practical parenting of right now?
You know what? If I could write a book on it, I couldn't. I wouldn't be able to. It's not that simple. I've got four different personalities.
Yes.
Four different personalities. Mm-hmm. And I know that in the beginning of this pandemic, I noticed a really big shift in my children and in my home. And even in myself. Like, and, you know, when it comes to our children, we have to really, you know, look at ourselves. Like, I was triggered, and I didn't realize how badly I was triggered until 3 months into the pandemic. I realized this feels a lot like when I was put in foster care. My friends, my
mm-hmm.
family, my community was taken from me,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and then I had to, like, whoa, I had a breakdown. And then I began to realize that my children were staying up later at night, and I'm like, what is with it? And then I realized that they were experiencing anxiety too, that they were experiencing a shift in their reality. And it has not been easy at all. And the homeschooling thing, and let me tell you, these teachers, some of them have been really great, and some of them have been like, really, okay, you're getting on my nerves. And they need, you know, I've had to tell a couple of them, you need to realize you're a guest in my home. As an Indigenous person and an Indigenous mother, you need to understand you're a guest in my home now, because I have to listen to your voice all day.
Mm.
And so we have had to address some issues. My children are both they're Indigenous and they're African American, and I've had to address some issues with racism with teachers. And I've sat with my daughter, my 16-year-old, and she's in high school, and I've had to, you know, say, you know, one of the things is that just seeing your children in this, seeing yourself and seeing your children, and acknowledging that in this day and in this time that we are going through something very traumatic. Identify that. Like, mm-hmm. we want to be able to move through this and say, okay, everything's fine, everything's normal, but it's not. And we know that. Our spirits know that. Our minds mm-hmm. know that. And so we can't pretend our way through that, because we are going to just cause this extreme heaviness on ourselves. And, you know, so taking it one day at a time. If you're a parent right now and it is hard, I would love to suggest some self-care, whatever that looks like to you. I know that we can't all just, like, get in the car and go to Starbucks and, you know, sit in the parking lot
right.
and eat a banana loaf and drink our coffee for an hour. Some of us don't have that luxury, but, you know, I often get in the car with my children because they need to get out too. And we go to, you know, our Bigfoot Java or our Starbucks, and we get drinks. They really love that. You know, and so, you know, seeing yourself in this, see where you're at, acknowledge where you're at, and see your children where you're at. And know that, you know what, we're just here right now. I know that life is crazy, it's overwhelming, it's stressed out. I will tell you right now, my house is a mess because I've been trying to clean for the past year and a half. It just
yep.
doesn't work when
mm-hmm.
children are home 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
just you know, see you where you're at right now, and know that you deserve some self-care. You deserve to say, okay, it's not working out the way that I want it to right now, and that's okay. And you know, find a moment where you can go sit outside under the stars, you know, go to the grocery store, buy some of your favorite fruits or your favorite vegetables, and eat your favorite food if you need to. And just one of the things that I do in my job is when I sit with my participants and, you know, we address self-care, we talk about self-care, and I've, you know, suggested, you know, I want you to do something for you once a week, whatever it is. Like, if you want that coffee once a week or every other week, get that coffee, but also don't just get that coffee and drive home and go on back to date. Take in that moment. Hold that cup, whether it be hot or cold, and just feel the heat or the coldness, and take in that moment. Smell the aroma of that drink. Take your first sip and just like breathe in and just be in that moment. Whatever it is you do, just be in that moment. And then when you find yourself engaging in your self-care and it becomes a habit, find something else. Because sometimes we do engage in our self-care and we're like, okay, this has become habit forming,
mm-hmm.
and it's no longer, I'm taking this moment. So then you've got to switch, you know, so that you are just giving yourself back time, because you deserve to give yourself that time too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Thank you for saying that, because I think sometimes we can get into an idea that as moms we should just be denied, you know, just sacrifice. And of course we love and we want to give and we want to share, but it's all right to take those moments for ourselves, moments of mercy, you know. And I really want to encourage our community too. You know, we all know moms and dads, we all know grandmas and grandpas, we all know people, just people. That this is a time to really be merciful to one another. You know, you never know how much people are facing or going through. You never know how they're hanging on and doing the best they can. And I think this is a time for us to be merciful to one another. You know, if your best friend did something and was having a hard time, you wouldn't scream at them and call them names and put them down. You would try to help them. Well, we should be our own best friends, too. You know, you're struggling today. You're not getting it 100% right. It's okay. You'll do better later. You'll just, but give yourself some mercy as you're, you know, navigating some really unusual times. And so what can the community do? What can everybody else do that supports mothers at this time?
I think that one of the things is just show up for one another. Like my sister and I,
mm-hmm.
we sit on the phone and we will just bounce our lives off of each other. And I won't try to fix her life and she won't try to fix mine. And I think that that's the most important thing that you can do for somebody is I'm going to sit here and I'm going to be with you. You know, so what we can do to support our mothers and our fathers and our elders is just, you know, be in that moment and say, you know, I see you're having a rough time. What can I do for you right now? Is there anything I can do for you right now? Or one thing that, you know, my sister has done throughout this pandemic, gosh, I love her too, I'll reflect back on like one morning I was having like, I was busy. I had to get to my class and I was trying to organize things and I get up and I make my coffee in the morning. And she texts me and she said, did you get your coffee? And I was like, what? Wait a minute. Well, yeah, I make my coffee every morning. But then I was like, oh, wait a minute. I know her. And I opened my door and there was, she had overeated me Starbucks. She will randomly send coffee to my house. And then I will, you know, I will text her and I was like, yes, thank you. And she'll say, you know, I appreciate you and I love you. And I'm so proud of you. And so those are the things that we need to hear from one another. I feel, you know, like we need to hear, you know, I'm proud of you. I see you. You know, if you can't afford to Uber Eat somebody, you know,
mm-hmm.
get them a coffee, get them their favorite treat from the store, drop it off at their doorstep and say, I see you. And mm-hmm. I just want you to know that I love you. And if there's anything that I can do for you right now, please let me know. You know, my sister was having a really hard time, and I've told her time and time again, if you need me, I'll take your children. You know, you can bring them over here. They're fine. You know, and one day she was having a really, really rough time, and she reached out and she called me. And that was, I know that that was so hard for her, and I know that's so hard for us as parents to reach out. But also, if you need that, reach out to somebody you trust and say, I really need you to show up for me right now, you mm-hmm. know? And if you can show up for somebody, please show up for them.
Mm-hmm.
Do not have the mindset of, well, you know, they'll figure it out, or, you know, they'll get through it, you know, it's not that bad, you know, people have it worse. We can't have that mindset with one another. If you can help in the moment, help in that moment. Because that could mean a lot, and that can make a lot of difference. You know, my mom, she's not a healthy person in my life, and she hasn't been in my life for 6 years, I think. But when I had my twins, they were both crying, and I was exhausted and I was tired, and she lived 20 minutes away from me, and I had called, and I remember that before she hung up the phone, I heard her say, well, what am I supposed to do about it? And I called her back, and I said, this is what you can do. You can offer to come and hold one of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You can come and you can offer to just hold a baby.
Yeah, right.
You know, we don't have to go buy extravagant dinners or gifts. We can, the gift of time
mm-hmm.
is what we can do for parents. And that's one of the things that I am working on in my community, is finding a way, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the project that I had with the art kit and the self-care kit. And I'm working on figuring out how to continue to incorporate that in our community, because a lot of people just need that moment of, you know, wow, you care about me enough to, like, I package them pretty. I love packaging things too. Package them up. But that gives a moment of, you know, I can sit with you and we can do this art thing. We don't have to talk about anything, and you get this self-care stuff. And so, you know, it's important. And I'm working on, you know, bringing up ideas in our community of how we can help support parents, how we can have a program that brings next ceremony and, I don't know, possibly even community baby showers, you know, because we have so many parents that just need to be seen and just to be held in a moment. And so that's, I talk.
I love it.
My children are like, okay, but you can give me some time back. But, but no, that's, you know, we can support our parents just by saying, what can I do for you right now?
Okay.
You know, I sat with a mother a couple weeks ago and said, what can we do? And you tell us what you need from us as your community, and then we will see what we can do to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it is. You know, it's not this, okay, I'm not going to offer because there's barriers. I'm going to say, what do you need from me right now? And let's see what we can do to figure it out. I mean, that's how, what, I mean, I imagine that's what we're going to do with our children, right? You know,
that's
like,
right.
I don't know how I'm going to make it work, but we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what we need. You know, the more we support one another, ultimately, again, it's the, you know, the medicine wheel. As we support one another, we're supporting our youth and their development and their growth, and we're giving them what they need by helping support their parents and their elders.
That is marvelous. You know, we have loved everything that you shared with us, and I thank you for opening your heart to us and sharing out of the treasures that are in it. I am so grateful that you were here with us today.
I'm so grateful that I was able to be here. I appreciate you, and I thank you for this opportunity.
We are so honored you were with us. Thank you. And for everyone listening to the sound of my voice and our lovely guest today, we want you to know that we are sending so much love your way right now. We're rooting for you. We believe in you. We love you. You're thinking, you don't even know me. We don't have to know you. We just have to know that the Creator loves you. The ancestors love you. The future loves you. And we do too. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima. Thank you for joining us today. And I can't wait until we're together next.
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.